Principles of Economics textbook. Textbook available for free at cnx.org. Audio recording available for free at educateforfree.com. Chapter 21.1. How the unemployment rate is defined and computed. Unemployment imposes high costs. Unemployed individuals suffer from loss of income and from stress. An economy with high unemployment suffers an opportunity cost of unused resources. The adult population can be divided into those in the labor force and those out of the labor force. In turn, those in the labor force are divided into employed and unemployed. A person without a job must be willing and able to work and actively looking for work to be counted as unemployed. Otherwise, a person without a job is counted as being out of the labor force. The unemployment rate is defined as the number of unemployed persons divided by the number of persons in the labor force, not the overall adult population. The current population survey, or CPS, conducted by the United States Census Bureau, measures the percentage of the labor force that is unemployed. The establishment payroll survey by the Bureau of Labor Statistics measures the net change in jobs created for the month. 21.2. Patterns of unemployment. The U.S. unemployment rate rises during periods of recession and depression, but falls back to the range of 4% to 6% when the economy is strong. The unemployment rate never falls to zero. Despite enormous growth in the size of the U.S. population and labor force in the 20th century, along with other major trends like globalization and new technology, the unemployment rate shows no long-term rising trend. Unemployment rates differ by group, higher for African Americans and Hispanics than for whites, higher for less educated than more educated, higher for young than middle-aged. Women's unemployment rates used to be higher than men's, but in recent years, men's and women's unemployment rates have been very similar. In recent years, unemployment rates in the United States have compared favorably with unemployment rates in most other high-income economies. 21.3. What causes changes in unemployment over the short run? Cyclical unemployment rises and falls with the business cycle. In a labor market with flexible wages, wages will adjust in such a market so that quantity demanded of labor always equals the quantity supplied of labor at the equilibrium wage. Many theories have proposed for why wages might not be flexible, but instead may adjust only in a sticky way, especially when it comes to downward adjustments. Implicit contracts, efficiency wage theory, adverse selection of wage cuts, insider-outsider model, and relative wage coordination. 21.4. What causes changes in unemployment over the long run? The natural rate of unemployment is the rate of unemployment that would be caused by the economic, social, and political forces in the economy, even when the economy is not in a recession. These factors include the frictional unemployment that occurs when people are put out of work for a time by the shifts of a dynamic and changing economy, and any laws concerning conditions of hiring and firing have the undesired side effect of discouraging job formation. They also include structural unemployment, which occurs when demand shifts permanently away from a certain type of job skill. Chapter 22.1. Tracking inflation. The price level is measured by using a basket of goods and services and calculating how the total cost of buying that basket of goods will increase over time. The price level is often expressed in terms of index numbers, which transform the cost of buying the basket of goods and services into a series of numbers in the same proportion to each other, but with an arbitrary base year of 100. The rate of inflation is measured as the percentage change between price levels or index numbers over time. 22.2. How changes in the cost of living are measured. Measuring price levels with a fixed basket of goods will always have two problems. The substitution bias, by which a fixed basket of goods does not allow for buying more of what is relatively less expensive and less of what is relatively more expensive, and the quality new good bias, by which a fixed basket cannot take into account improvements in the quality and advent of new goods. These problems can be reduced in degree, for example, by allowing the basket of goods to evolve over time, but they cannot be totally eliminated. The most commonly cited measure of inflation is the Consumer Price Index, or CPI, which is based on a basket of goods representing what the typical consumer buys. The Core Inflation Index further breaks down the CPI by excluding volatile economic variables. Several price indices are not based on baskets of consumer goods. The GDP deflator is based on all of the components of GDP. The Producer Price Index is based on prices of supplies and inputs bought by producers of goods and services. An Employment Cost Index measures wage inflation in the labor market. An International Price Index is based on the prices of merchandise that is exported or imported. 22.3. How the U.S. and other countries experience inflation. In the U.S. economy, the annual inflation rate in the last two decades has typically been around 2-4%. The periods of highest inflation in the United States in the 20th century occurred during the years after World Wars I and II and in the 1970s. The period of lowest inflation, actually with deflation, was the Great Depression of the 1930s. 22.4. The confusion over inflation. Unexpected inflation will tend to hurt those whose money received in terms of wages and interest payments does not rise with inflation. In contrast, inflation can help those who owe money that can be paid in less valuable inflated dollars. Low rates of inflation have relatively little economic impact over the short term. Over the medium and the long term, even low rates of inflation can complicate future planning. High rates of inflation can muddle price signals in the short term and prevent market forces from operating efficiently, and can vastly complicate long-term savings and investment decisions. 22.5. Indexing and its limitations. A payment is said to be indexed if it is automatically adjusted for inflation. Examples of indexing in the private sector include wage contracts with cost of living adjustments, or COLAs, and loan agreements like adjustable rate mortgages, or ARMs. Examples of indexing in the public sector include tax brackets and Social Security payments. Chapter 23, 23.1, Measuring Trade Balances. The trade balance measures the gap between a country's exports and its imports. In most high-income economies, goods make up less than half of the country's total production, while services compose more than half. The last two decades have seen a surge in international trade and services. However, most global trade still takes the form of goods rather than services. The current account balance includes the trade in goods, services, and money flowing into and out of a country from investments and unilateral transfers. 23.2. Trade balances in historical and international context. The United States developed large trade surpluses in the early 1980s, swung back to a tiny trade surplus in 1991, and then had an even larger trade deficit in the late 1990s and early 2000s. As we will see below, a trade deficit necessarily means a net inflow of financial capital from abroad, while a trade surplus necessarily means a net outflow of financial capital from an economy to other countries. 23.3. Trade balances and the flows of financial capital. International flows of goods and services are closely connected to the international flows of financial capital. A current account deficit means that, after taking all the flows of payments from goods, services, and income together, the country is a net borrower from the rest of the world. A current account surplus is the opposite and means the country is a net lender to the rest of the world. 23.4. The National Savings and Investment Identity. The national saving and investment identity is based on the relationship that the total quantity of financial capital supplied from all sources must equal the total quantity of financial capital demanded from all sources. If S is private savings, T is taxes, G is government spending, M is imports, X is exports, and I is investment, then for an economy with a current account deficit and a budget deficit, supply of financial capital will equal demand for financial capital, or S plus, in parentheses, M minus X equals I plus, in parentheses, G minus T. A recession tends to increase the trade balance, meaning a higher trade surplus or lower trade deficit, while economic boom will tend to decrease the trade balance, meaning a lower trade surplus or a larger trade deficit. 23.5. The pros and cons of trade deficits and surpluses. Trade surpluses are no guarantee of economic health, and trade deficits are no guarantee of economic weakness. Either trade deficits or trade surpluses can work out well or poorly, depending on whether the corresponding flows of financial capital are wisely invested. 23.6. The difference between level of trade and the trade balance. There's a difference between the level of a country's trade and the balance of trade. The level of trade is measured by the percentage of exports out of GDP or the size of the economy. Small economies that have nearby trading partners and a history of international trade will tend to have higher levels of trade. Larger economies with few nearby trade partners and a limited history of international trade will tend to have lower levels of trade. The level of trade is different from the trade balance. The level of trade depends on a country's history of trade, its geography, and the size of its economy. A country's balance of trade is the dollar difference between its exports and imports. Trade deficits and trade surpluses are not necessarily good or bad. It depends on the circumstances. Even if a country is borrowing, if that money is invested in productivity-boosting investments, it can lead to an improvement in long-term economic growth. Chapter 24, 24.1, Macroeconomic Perspectives on Demand and Supply. Neoclassical economists emphasize Say's law, which holds that supply creates its own demand. Keynesian economists emphasize Keynes' law, which holds that demand creates its own supply. Many mainstream economists take a Keynesian perspective, emphasizing the importance of aggregate demand for the short run, and a neoclassical perspective, emphasizing the importance of aggregate supply for the long run. 24.2. Building a model of aggregate demand and aggregate supply. The upward sloping short run aggregate supply, or SRAS, curve shows the positive relationship between the price level and the level of real GDP in the short run. Aggregate supply slopes up because when the price level for outputs increases, while the price level of inputs remains fixed, the opportunity for additional profits encourages more production. The aggregate supply curve is near horizontal on the left and near vertical on the right. In the long run, aggregate supply is shown by a vertical line at the level of potential output, which is the maximum level of output the economy can produce with its existing levels of workers, physical capital, technology, and economic institutions. The downward sloping aggregate demand, or AD, curve shows the relationship between the price level for outputs and the quantity of total spending in the economy. It slopes down because of A, the wealth effect, which means that a higher price level leads to lower real wealth, which reduces the level of consumption, B, the interest rate effect, which holds that a higher price level will mean a greater demand for money, which will tend to drive up interest rates and reduce investment spending, and C, the foreign price effect, which holds that a rise in the price level will make domestic goods relatively more expensive, discouraging exports and encouraging imports. 24.3, Shifts in Aggregate Supply. The aggregate demand, aggregate supply, or AD/AS, diagram shows how AD and AS interact. The intersection of the AD and AS curves shows the equilibrium output and price level in the economy. Movements of either AS or AD will result in a different equilibrium output and price level. The aggregate supply curve will shift out to the right as productivity increases. It will shift back to the left as the price of key inputs rise, and will shift out to the right if the price of key inputs falls. If the AS curve shifts back to the left, the combination of lower output, higher unemployment, and higher inflation, called stagflation, occurs. If AS shifts out to the right, a combination of lower inflation, higher output, and lower unemployment is possible. 24.4, shifts in aggregate demand. The AD curve will shift out as the components of aggregate demand, C, I, G, and X minus M rise. It will shift back to the left as these components fall. These factors can change because of different personal choices, like those resulting from consumer or business confidence, or from policy choices like changes in government spending and taxes. If the AD curve shifts to the right, then the equilibrium quantity of output and the price level will rise. If the AD curve shifts to the left, then the equilibrium quantity of output and the price level will fall. Whether equilibrium output changes relatively more than the price level or whether the price level changes relatively more than output is determined by where the AD curve intersects the AS curve. The AD over AS diagram superficially resembles the microeconomic supply and demand diagram on the surface, but in reality, what is on the horizontal and vertical axis and the underlying economic reasons for the shapes of the curves are very different. Long-term economic growth is illustrated in the AD-AS framework by a gradual shift of the aggregate supply curve to the right. A recession is illustrated when the intersection of AD and AS is substantially below potential GDP, while an expanding economy is illustrated when the intersection of AS and AD is near potential GDP. 24.5. How the AD-AS model incorporates growth, unemployment, and inflation. Cyclical unemployment is relatively large in the AD-AS framework when the equilibrium is substantially below potential GDP. Cyclical unemployment is small in the AD-AS framework when the equilibrium is near potential GDP. The natural rate of unemployment, as determined by the labor market institutions of the economy, is built into what is meant by potential GDP, but does not otherwise appear in an AD-AS diagram. Pressures for inflation to rise or fall are shown in the AD-AS framework when the movement from one equilibrium to another causes the price level to rise or fall. The balance of trade does not appear directly in the AD-AS diagram, but it appears indirectly in several ways. Increases in exports or declines in imports can cause shifts in AD. Changes in the price of key imported inputs to production, like oil, can cause shifts in AS. The AD-AS model is the key model used in this book to understand macroeconomic issues. 24.6. Keynes' Law and Say's Law in the AD-AS model. The SRAS curve can be divided into three zones. Keynes' Law says demand creates its own supply, so that changes in aggregate demand cause changes in real GDP and employment. Keynes' Law can be shown on the horizontal Keynesian zone of the aggregate supply curve. The Keynesian zone occurs at the left of the SRAS curve, where it is fairly flat, so movements in the AD will affect output, but have little effect on the price level. Say's Law says supply creates its own demand. Changes in aggregate demand have no effect on real GDP and employment, only on the price level. Say's Law can be shown on the vertical neoclassical zone of the aggregate supply curve. The neoclassical zone occurs at the right of the SRAS curve, where it is fairly vertical, and so movements in AD will affect the price level, but have little impact on output. The intermediate zone in the middle of the SRAS curve is upward sloping, so a rise in AD will cause higher output and price level, while a fall in AD will lead to lower output and price level. Chapter 25, 25.1, Aggregate Demand in Keynesian Analysis. Aggregate demand is the sum of four components: consumption, investment, government spending, and net exports. Consumption will change for a number of reasons, including movements in income, taxes, expectations about future income, and changes in wealth levels. Investment will change in response to its expected profitability, which in turn is shaped by expectations about future economic growth, the creation of new technologies, the price of key inputs, and tax incentives for investment. Investment will also change when interest rates rise or fall. Government spending and taxes are determined by political considerations. Exports and imports change according to relative growth rates and prices between two economies. 25.2. The building blocks of Keynesian analysis. Keynesian economics is based on two main ideas. Aggregate demand is more likely than aggregate supply to be the primary cause of a short-run economic event like a recession. Number two, wages and prices can be sticky, and so, in an economic downturn, unemployment can result. The latter is an example of macroeconomic externality. While surpluses cause prices to fall at the micro level, they do not necessarily at the macro level. Instead, the adjustment to a decrease in demand occurs only through decreased quantities. One reason why prices may be sticky is menu costs, the cost of changing prices. These include internal costs a business faces in changing prices in terms of labeling, record keeping, and accounting, and also the costs of communicating the price change to possibly unhappy customers. Keynesians also believe in the existence of the expenditure multiplier, the notion that a change in the autonomous expenditure causes a more than proportionate change in GDP. 25.3, the Phillips curve. A Phillips curve shows the trade-off between unemployment and inflation in an economy. From a Keynesian viewpoint, the Phillips curve should slope down so that higher unemployment means lower inflation and vice versa. However, a downward-sloping Phillips curve is a short-term relationship that may shift after a few years. Keynesian macroeconomics argues that the solution to a recession is expansionary fiscal policy, such as tax cuts to stimulate consumption and investment, or direct increases in government spending that would shift the aggregate demand curve to the right. The other side of Keynesian policy occurs when the economy is operating above potential GDP. In this situation, unemployment is low, but inflationary rises in the price level are a concern. The Keynesian response would be contractionary fiscal policy, using tax increases or government spending cuts to shift AD to the left. 25.4, the Keynesian perspective on market forces. The Keynesian prescription for stabilizing the economy implies government intervention at the macroeconomic level, increasing aggregate demand when private demand falls, and decreasing aggregate demand when private demand rises. This does not imply that the government should be passing laws or regulations that set prices and quantities in the microeconomic markets. Chapter 26, 26.1, the building blocks of neoclassical analysis. Neoclassical perspective argues that in the long run, the economy will adjust back to its potential GDP level of output through flexible price levels. Thus, the neoclassical perspective views the long-run AS curve as vertical. A rational expectations perspective argues that people have excellent information about economic events and how the economy works, and that as a result, price and other economic adjustments will happen very quickly. In adaptive expectations theory, people have limited information about economic information and how the economy works, and so price and other economic adjustments can be slow. 26.2, the policy implications of the neoclassical perspective. Neoclassical economists tend to put relatively more emphasis on long-term growth than on fighting recession, because they believe that recessions will fade in a few years and long-term growth will ultimately determine the standard of living. They tend to focus more on reducing the natural rate of unemployment caused by economic institutions and government policies than the cyclical unemployment caused by recession. Neoclassical economists also see no social benefit to inflation. With an upward-sloping Keynesian AS curve, inflation can arise because an economy is approaching full employment. With a vertical long-run neoclassical AS curve, inflation does not accompany any rise in output. If aggregate supply is vertical, then aggregate demand does not affect the quantity of output. Instead, aggregate demand can only cause inflationary changes in the price level. A vertical aggregate supply curve, where the quantity of output is consistent with many different price levels, also implies a vertical Phillips curve. 26.3. Balancing Keynesian and neoclassical models. The Keynesian perspective considers changes to aggregate demand to be the cause of business cycle fluctuations. Keynesians are likely to advocate that policymakers actively attempt to reverse recessionary and inflationary periods because they are not convinced that the self-correcting economy can easily return to full employment. The neoclassical perspective places more emphasis on aggregate supply. The level of potential GDP is determined by long-term productivity growth, and that the economy typically will return to full employment after a change in aggregate demand. Skeptical of the effectiveness and timeliness of Keynesian policy, neoclassical economists are more likely to advocate a hands-off or fairly limited role for active stabilization policy. While Keynesians would tend to advocate an acceptable trade-off between inflation and unemployment when counteracting a recession, neoclassical economists argue that no such trade-off exists. Any short-term gains in lower unemployment will eventually vanish, and the result of the active policy will only be inflation. Chapter 27, 27.1, Defining Money by Its Functions. Money is what people in a society regularly use when purchasing or selling goods and services. If money were not available, people would need to barter with each other, meaning that each person would need to identify others with whom they have a double coincidence of wants. That is, each party has a specific good or service that the other desires. Money serves several functions: a medium of exchange, a unit of account, a store of value, and a standard of deferred payment. There are two types of money: commodity money, which is an item used as money, but which also has value from its use as something other than money, and fiat money, which has no intrinsic value but is declared by a government to be the legal tender of a country. 27.2. Measuring money. Currency, M1 and M2. Money is measured with several definitions. M1 includes currency and money in checking accounts, demand deposits. Traveler's checks are also a component of M1 but are declining in use. M2 includes all of M1 plus savings deposits, time deposits like certificates of deposit, and money market funds. 27.3. The role of banks. Banks facilitate the use of money for transactions in the economy because people and firms can use bank accounts when selling or buying goods and services, when paying a worker or being paid, and when saving money or receiving a loan. In the financial capital market, banks are financial intermediaries. That is, they operate between savers who supply financial capital and borrowers who demand loans. A balance sheet, sometimes called a T-account, is an accounting tool which lists assets in one column and liabilities in another column. The liabilities of a bank are its deposits. The assets of a bank include its loans, its ownership of bonds, and its reserves, which are not loaned out. The net worth of a bank is calculated by subtracting the bank's liabilities from its assets. Banks run a risk of negative net worth if the value of their assets declines. The value of assets can decline because of an unexpectedly higher number of defaults on loans, or if interest rates rise and the bank suffers an asset liability time mismatch in which the bank is receiving a low rate of interest on its long-term loans but must pay the currently higher market rate of interest to attract depositors. Banks can protect themselves against these risks by choosing to diversify their loans or to hold a greater portion of their assets in bonds and reserves. If banks hold only a fraction of their deposits as reserves, then the process of banks lending money, those loans being redeposited in banks, and the banks making additional loans will create money in the economy. 27.4. How banks create money. The money multiplier is defined as the quantity of money that the banking system can generate from each $1 of bank reserves. The formula for calculating the multiplier is 1 divided by the reserve ratio, where the reserve ratio is the fraction of deposits that the bank wishes to hold as reserves. The quantity of money in an economy and the quantity of credit for loans are inextricably intertwined. Much of the money in an economy is created by the network of banks making loans, people making deposits, and banks making more loans. Given the macroeconomic dangers of a malfunctioning banking system, monetary policy and bank regulation will discuss government policies for controlling the money supply and for keeping the banking system safe. Chapter 28, 28.1, the Federal Reserve Banking System and Central Banks. The most prominent task of a central bank is to conduct monetary policy, which involves changes to interest rates and credit conditions, affecting the amount of borrowing and spending in an economy. Some prominent central banks around the world include the U.S. Federal Reserve, the European Central Bank, the Bank of Japan, and the Bank of England. 28.2. Bank Regulation. A bank run occurs when there are rumors, possibly true, possibly false, that a bank is at financial risk of having negative net worth. As a result, depositors rush to the bank to withdraw their money and put it somewhere safe. Even false rumors, if they cause a bank run, can force a healthy bank to lose its deposits and be forced to close. Deposit insurance guarantees bank depositors that even if the bank has a negative net worth, their deposits will be protected. In the United States, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, or FDIC, collects deposit insurance premiums from banks and guarantees bank deposits up to $250,000. Bank supervision involves inspecting the balance sheets of banks to make sure that they have positive net worth and that their assets are not too risky. In the United States, the Office of the Comptroller of Currency, or OCC, is responsible for supervising banks and inspecting savings and loans, and National Credit Union Administration, NCUA, is responsible for inspecting credit unions. The FDIC and the Federal Reserve also play a role in bank supervision. When a central bank acts as a lender of last resort, it makes short-term loans available in situations of severe financial panic or stress. The failure of a single bank can be treated like any other business failure. Yet, if many banks fail, it can reduce aggregate demand in a way that can bring on or deepen a recession. The combination of deposit insurance, bank supervision, and lender of last resort policies help to prevent weaknesses in the banking system from causing recessions. 28.3. How a central bank executes monetary policy. A central bank has three traditional tools to conduct monetary policy. Open market operations, which involves buying and selling government bonds with banks. Reserve requirements, which determine what level of reserves a bank is legally required to hold. And discount rates, which is the interest rate charged by the central bank on the loans that it gives to other commercial banks. The most commonly used tool is open market operations. 28.4, monetary policy and economic outcomes. An expansionary or loose monetary policy raises the quantity of money and credit above what it otherwise would have been and reduces interest rates, boosting aggregate demand and thus countering recession. A contractionary monetary policy, also called a tight monetary policy, reduces the quantity of money and credit below what it otherwise would have been and raises interest rates, seeking to hold down inflation. During the 2008-2009 recession, central banks around the world also used quantitative easing to expand the supply of credit. 28.5. Pitfalls for monetary policy. Monetary policy is inevitably imprecise for a number of reasons. A. The effects occur only after long and variable lags. B. If banks decide to hold excess reserves, monetary policy cannot force them to lend. And C. Velocity may shift in unpredictable ways. The basic quantity equation of money is MV equals PQ, where M is the money supply, V is the velocity of money, P is the price level, and Q is the real output of the economy. Some central banks, like the European Central Bank, practice inflation targeting, which means that the only goal of the central bank is to keep inflation within a low target range. Other central banks, such as the U.S. Federal Reserve, are free to focus on either reducing inflation or stimulating an economy that is in recession, whichever goal seems more important at the time.